Welcome to the Doom Kitchen. This is not a news show. It's a talk show. We do not give financial, legal, medical, or any kind of advice. We are not responsible for the actions of our listeners. You are responsible for you. If anything offends you, we were only joking. Promise.
Welcome to the Doom Kitchen. As a lot of people have probably heard from me before, I love bikes, and I haven't done an episode on them yet, but I scrounged around and found myself a fellow cyclist that's in pretty much the community, Tyler Yonke of Libertarian Podcast Review and Between Two Wheels and sometimes Tower Gang. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ando. Appreciate it. You found my cycling podcast, I guess.
I actually found you through Tower Gang.
Okay, but you mentioned it. That's my point.
Yeah. I found it whenever I was looking for your email earlier. Okay. I was like, oh, cool.
Yeah, so, I'm the Zach Galifianakis of cycling, I guess. That's what it is.
Nice. Yeah. Well, first of all, go ahead and explain yourself, and then we'll jump to talking about bike stuff.
Yeah, sure. I guess I'm Libertarian Podcast Review. I'd review libertarian-ish adjacent podcasts, you know, conservative, lefty, whatever, kind of in that realm. What else do I do? I'm an attorney, family law attorney. I am a cyclist. I used to be a professional cyclist way back in the day, and then I do a cycling podcast. It's kind of been on hiatus, but with the Tour de France coming up, starting July 1st, I will be doing that as well. So if people are interested in that, they can check that out as well. So that's me. That's the fun parts about me, I guess.
So do you slightly regret pigeonholing your podcast with libertarianism?
That's a good question, because a lot of people have, like, you know, the libertarian, when I first started this, some of those people that were hardcore in there, which I've had on my show, Mark Claire, I don't know if you know how familiar you are with all these, Mark Claire, Pete Quinones, and a few others, they've kind of left that side and discarded it. I don't have a problem with it. Look, it labels don't mean much. All I really wanted, like the cycling one, I would talk, you know, do interviews and, you know, analysis of stuff. And I kind of wanted that with libertarian, and I'm like, what, I need something different than everyone. And with this, I don't just review podcasts, although I just did a Tom Woods review, and Tom Woods has like 2,300 episodes and it was 8 days. So that's pretty intensive, but you know, I do a Kill Pod. It's kind of a break off of Kill Tony, and my buddy Andy and I do that. And it's, people come on and rant, and we mock them and they mock us. And it's the title, and it's kind of what the main thing is, you know, have podcasts in there, but I do every kind of thing. So no, I don't regret it. I am on Twitter. My name right now is just Pod Review. So I've kind of pulled myself a little bit, but I'm still libertarian-ish. So yeah.
Yeah. Ish. Yeah. It's funny, 'cause there's that whole journey you take. 'Cause I'm there as, so I didn't want to associate my show with libertarianism, especially because I was leaning more toward anarchism at that time.
Yeah.
And then I got sucked into this, you know, post-libertarian right-wingism thing as well. And now it's like, oh, okay, I'm glad I didn't make that my identity. Just because I it's hard to really say what I am, but I would love to have a functioning society where people are not touching kids, and you know, right, the wrong sides of libertarianism are not the things that are being celebrated the most. Like there's so many people out there that are all for this people's rights and that people's rights, which are really special privileges over everybody else. And then the whole stand with sex workers thing and all the other nonsense that we got out of Joe Jorgensen whenever it was, come on, you know, like, we're in the middle of a scamdemic and this is what you want to campaign on.
Yeah. I think you though, can take, all these points and argue them from a libertarian point of view. You know, I don't know if you've ever, Hazness, he's a law professor, and he wrote this, thesis called The Myth of the Rule of Law. And it's basically how, you know, as an attorney, you have, and I do this all, especially with family law, which is one time you're on one side of it. It's not like a prosecutor or a defense attorney where you're always on the one side of the issue. I'm on both sides of the issues all the time, like one time on this side. And so you can make arguments differing in sides to the same point all the time. And that's kind of his point of this is, which is, you know, one person makes this argument on this way, one makes it on this way. And the judge is really trying to, you know, balance and figure out which way it goes. And I think that can be done with libertarian. You talk about kids stuff and all the, you know, proper, if you're enforcing proper, like we have homeless problem here in California. If they just allowed business owners to enforce property rights all the way out to the street, or even if the police were doing so, you wouldn't have these problems. So you get the lefty libertarians that then, you know, over anyway. So my point is on some of that, I see the critiques, but it's similar to only if I thought every conservative was Charlie Kirk. Right. That's the only thing on the right is just a Charlie Kirk. And if you're not a libertarian or left, that's exactly how you believe. Well, we're all different. So
that's true. Yeah, you can. It's funny, though, because you see that if you can make a libertarian case for just about anything, does it mean anything anymore? You know,
right. Keep going. Go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to. Okay. That. Good point.
But for instance, you know, the borders thing was a big crux for a lot of people, and I think most reasonable people would, you know, you don't have a place if you don't have a border. It doesn't exist if there's no line there that says this is mine and that's yours, you know. Yeah. And so many people are trying to make open borders arguments, or they try to make closed borders arguments, and I'm saying that you're not arguing over anything if there's no borders. Once you're there, nothing means anything, and it's just this crazy postmodernist stuff.
Yeah, for the most part, I'm not disagreeing. I think though that for me, and look, this is why I can't go post-libertarian, because they, in a sense, want to associate with the right, and I was there all my life, and it's like the your mom's a whore and she keeps wanting the dad to come. I don't know. It's just, I'm like, the whore is always a whore. I don't know why I said my mom, but your ex-wife or something like this. My mom's a wonderful person. I shouldn't have done that. But the point is, this person's horrible all the time. And suddenly, you know, you think that they're better now. It's no, the right's still the right. So I don't want to associate with them. I can be a disaffected or somewhat whatever libertarian, but I'm not going to go back to that side either. So, and you know what? Here is the big deal. We're going to talk about bikes, I think, a little bit. There's life out there. Okay, I have four kids. I got a wife. I got a job. For the most part, those are the things that take up my day, and they should. Now, it doesn't mean you shouldn't be interested in politics, because politics will be interested in you. But you can't live your life just being all encompassed on that stuff either.
Right, right. Yeah, I listen to a lot of podcasts, as you do. That's another thing that we have in common, other than the bike thing. But I drive a truck, and you're an attorney. Where do you find the time?
I ride my bike, and that's typically where I'm listening to a lot of podcasts. I do yard work. I work out here. We have a nice little plot of land. I listen to it then. My wife enjoys podcasts, so we share stuff back and forth. I'm also, I don't know if it's any, I've never been diagnosed with anything, but I listen to stuff while I work. So I'll be at work. I'll watch TV while I'm watching Black Mirror. I went through like six episodes today while I was preparing for court. It's this weird thing about me. I need something to kind of, it's like a white noise that attracts something, and then I can focus. So I do a lot of podcasts while I'm working too. So what about you? I guess like in the truck a lot, or whatever you're driving.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm either on an airplane or in a truck. And so that's on the plane, prime. It's super easy. I don't get much time to read, but that's because I've got my ears plugged in most of the time. And
what do you think of that? Because I've got books behind me. You can't see them here. And I bought a bunch. I want to see it. I want to read them. And I'm too busy doing things. So the podcast, I can do it. So sometimes it's a book on tape. But what about you? You like miss that or?
Oh, I love books on tape. And you mentioned Pete earlier. Pete's always reading something to us. So that's great. I love it whenever he reads and interprets and things like that. But there's a couple of things that I have with me to read. So, and I need to read them because for the sake of the show, you know, I mean, as far as other podcasters go, most of them, the ones that take the time and read things, do a heck of a lot better than me, at least in my own opinion, because they're, you know, they're taking in something that most people aren't.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And podcast is really how, you know, in a few weeks, I'm going to be doing this deep dive with the History Homos about Fatty Arbuckle. And so I'm going to listen to a ton of podcasts on this. It's going to be fun. But yeah. So that's how I get a lot of the research. And it, you know, a few weeks ago, I did one on a deep dive on Michael Jackson on the WTF forum, which is really fun too. And that, you know, but I'm just getting other people's podcasts. So it's, I'm really just eating it and throwing it up, you know? I mean, it's like,
and look, there's, I will say part of my format, what I do, you know, I'll play clips of the week type of thing where I'll get a bunch of different clips and it takes work to do that. And then I make comments and stuff, but it's also somewhat lazy. I mean, I just, I'm using other people's work. I've listened to it and I do it. You know, if I really try to put together a show where I'm like what you're talking about, I mean, that's, I have a job. I have fam. My wife would divorce me if I just spent all this time. And sometimes I really want to, because there's topics that I'm just like, oh, I could do such a great job on this. And then next thing you know, time has passed and I'm just like, whatever, but good for you. I take it. You've got some travel time on your hands. So.
Yeah. I mean, on a big load, like if, you know, something like this, where it's 1400 miles, that's 2 days of at least 2 days of 11 hours straight driving. So that's a lot of time. And, you know, I have phone conversations. I managed to do this show in my off time. You know, I had a little bit of a smaller day just because, well, I wanted to hit this on time for one. And then the other reason is that whenever this is due, is way later than I can get there. So, so it's due on Thursday, but if I rushed really hard, I could get it there that time of day on Wednesday, but also I won't be able to drive back to the yard from there. So I might as well give myself a little extra time and get the things I want to get done and nice. make tomorrow a longer day. And, plus I prefer driving during the day. And if I can set myself up to do that, which I'm going to do, it's going to be great.
So without getting into too much, cause you said they fly you out and then you do, are you using their vehicles? You don't have a set truck or anything that you're driving. What's that? So it's always different every time, or what's the situation?
It's always different. I carry a suitcase and a backpack everywhere I go. And so my boss sends me an email as I'm about to turn a truck in and says, hey, you're picking up truck number blankety blank. And it's here. And so then I send him a flight request and he sends it to another department, and I got my plane ticket the next day, stay in a hotel that night. And usually if it's working fast, it's working like that. Sometimes it takes a little while to get matched up with another truck, but then I go out there, find the truck, and then make sure it works, and then drive it back to a terminal. They give me assignments along the way.
Is it, do you ever run into, like, I mean, cause you're driving a different truck all the time. So is that a problem? How do you deal with that situation?
Well, when you live in a truck all the time, you can do things like, have your own refrigerator and live off of groceries instead of having to eat at restaurants all the time. So having your own truck or the same truck all the time is really nice for saving money that way. They pay us a little extra. But I mean, we have a lot more expenses than a regular driver does.
Gotcha.
And yeah, you know, it's like I get paid for travel days. I get paid for days that I have to wait. But there's advantages of having the same truck all the time. You know what's wrong with it. You know what's right with it. And yeah, sometimes I'll get a truck that has issues and I'll have to spend a few days at a shop. You know, I'll have to spend a few days in a hotel, but you know, that's just how it goes. Sometimes the tires are bad, you know, whatever. There's things
I don't like driving my son's truck because I get the brakes are just different. So I couldn't imagine when you're hauling big loads, all the differences. Good for you. I'm sure you're a consummate pro.
You know, I really like variety. It's one of those things for me. It is variety makes me happy. And you know, like I was in California on Friday. Right now I'm in North or South Dakota. So I'm moving around, you know, I flew from California to Iowa, and then I picked this thing up, and then I picked up my assignment in Wisconsin and have had a great day driving along 90, seeing all the farms and stuff.
Fantastic. So when do you get to ride your bike? Sorry, I'm not supposed to be conducting the interview here.
No,
sorry,
no, that's fine. I was hoping you would do this because, you know, this it's great. So I have a bike at one of our terminals. So whenever I get to Utah, I can ride, which is great. My friend hangs onto it and we meet up and ride.
Where in Utah?
Salt Lake.
Okay.
And then I have my bikes in Texas where I'm from. So whenever I get home, I don't get to ride enough. In these past 3 years that I've been a driver, I don't get to ride as much as I used to. I mean, I used to ride for a living. So we come from different schools of cycling. I was a pedicab driver, which is a three-wheeled bike with the couch in the back.
Yeah.
And taking tourists around, baseball games, concerts, all the other stuff. I did it in Austin, Seattle, Denver, DC, Chicago, bunches of places. Went out, worked special events, went out, worked festivals, you know, like big stuff like Coachella and things like that. But yeah, it's, you know, I was a professional cyclist, and you're a professional cyclist in a different way.
Former
for me as well. But I actually earned my living off of it, and yours, I guess, is, you know, if you're doing that, it's still, you have to have a real job, right?
I'll tell you, I did it pretty good level. This was in the late 90s up until like 2000. And our team was pretty good, but we did a few stints over. We went to called the Pro Tour. It was Prudential. It was a big thing in UK at one point. Toured to Langkawi in Malaysia. But other than that, it's all US. But we were, you know, so it's like the minor leagues in a sense, you know, like AAA baseball. But the difference is we mixed it in. So pros would come back to the US, or they'd have, this is a big deal, 1996. World championships were going to be in Bogota, Colombia. Well, no one wanted to go there at the time because of all the rampant crime to train, but they wanted to train at altitude. So what they decided to do, they came over to Colorado and they did a big race over there. So it was all, you know, all the big, big racers at the time, I got to go against them and get shelled in 1996. So I did that. Now, there were a lot of guys that you made more as a pedicab, I'm sure. I'm not knocking that. Or my son working for minimum wage would make than a cyclist. And it's still somewhat that way now. It's very tiered. I mean, you got, you know, you can be a pro, now it's even easier. Well, the licensing is a little bit different now, but you get a pro. If you are a pro contract, your team typically has to have a bank reserve to actually pay you. And that stemmed from, that law went into effect from my team when we went over to Malaysia and won a bunch of money over there and then came back and the team manager was had tax problems and wasn't paying the team. And then they filed grievances. And next thing you know, there's like a UCI rule, which is a cycling governing body, about having to have a bank reserve. Anyway, that's kind of my little backstory there.
So this is a long distance road biking, right?
Yeah. So think of, you know, people see Tour de France or the Olympics type of, right. Yeah, you're right. There's so many different types of fields you could have, but yeah, road racing specific. Yeah.
So not carbon, but steel, right?
No, definitely carbon. I mean, carbon bikes.
Okay.
Greg LeMond really kind of fashioned that whole thing in the 80s, 88. He started riding a carbon fiber bike and they were not full carbon at the time. You would have like a rear triangle that was carbon, maybe some other seat stays that were steel. I don't know, some combo of that. But now like my bike's full carbon. Almost everything is now.
Okay. So they're serious race bikes. Just things that you could lift up with a finger.
And matter of fact, it got weird with technology that bikes were getting super light, and then they were concerned that they were going to be stretching the limits of what bikes can actually do. And I don't know if this is kind of a off-field tangent with engineering, but have you ever seen the Tacoma Narrows Bridge? That the famous is like in the, I think the 70s. So engineering, what happened is people started to build things and technology changes, and the engineers start stretching the boundaries. Next thing you know, you had this bridge in up in by Seattle that was having harmonics, and it just destroyed. It's a fascinating video to see. This bridge is just going up and down, down like a snake, and then it just explodes. So the same thing was kind of happening with cycling. They were concerned about, you know, over engineering, having things too light. So they put in a weight limit, 6.4 kilograms or something like that, for a weight limit of bikes, but technology, and that still rule is in effect, but technology is to the point now where they are adding weight to bikes to weigh in for races to make sure that they meet that limit, because they're lighter than the rule says it can be, but the rule says it has to be this certain weight. So, and the bikes are safe. That's kind of the point on that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's interesting. So you have to put weights in certain areas in order to, and where you put the weight matters.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So I think they're just stuffing some things down the seat too. And it's, right. it's really close and it's wheels included. So, you know, And you don't always see this, but there was a deal for a while, you know, like say 10 years ago, they were dead weigh bikes all the time at the start to make sure they're not too light. I don't know. It's gotcha. Like a jockey, I guess.
So do you do other types of cycling, or are you strictly road biker?
I've always been mostly road. I did some mountain biking, a little bit just to train and stuff and enjoy myself when I was younger. I'd always have worse wrecks though. And then now yeah. I mean, I will wreck and I had a real bad wreck 2 years ago, broke my neck and my back. But you know, that happens like once every so often, whereas the mountain bike, every time I'd go, you know, tackle a wheel or break a frame or something. And, so I was just like, ugh, I'm all kind of over that. Whereas road, you're fine for a year and all of a sudden then you have a bad wreck. So you go further. Now there's a big thing is gravel racing, which is kind of combining the two. So it's a bike that's very much like a road bike, or cyclocross. I don't know if you know what that is, but it's not mountain bike. It's still shaped like a road bike, and you're doing like fire roads, not, you know, twisty, trails like you would on mountain bike. And those are a lot of fun too. And what the difference with that is you're kind of getting off the road. You're not causing traffic issues necessarily. And, there's a lot of like open, you're not sanctioned rides. It's just a big group and they're, people are taking them more like a marathon where you have serious competitors and then people that are just out there for a ride. Whereas what I do, it's all, you know, top to bottom, it's very serious and you get time cut. And you know, if you get dropped and don't make it, it's anyway. So people are enjoying that a little bit more. I still like the hardcore racing though.
Yeah. My main cycling thing, you know, other than obviously commuting and then my work back then, I love touring. So I've done 9 different tours and just, you know, going up the mountain. And sometimes it's really hard, especially with gear and things like that. You know, you're not only going up with a bike, you're carrying about 70 pounds of your crap, you know?
Yeah, that's intense. That's to me, it's very impressive because you're, like you said, you're carrying everything. Whereas we're stripped down. There's nothing that extra that you want in there.
It's a fun way to see the country. And I think really the best way. And one of the reasons why I wanted to have this conversation was because I'm always talking about prepping and things like that. And, you know, people seem to think that they're going to be able to get by with their vehicles as things get crappier, as the money gets worse, as, you know, the insane environmentalists try to take away our things and, you know, put us on cars with batteries that they can shut off anytime they want.
Yep.
If you have a bike that works and you have spare parts just in case, you know, you want to carry some spare parts, obviously. But if you have a bike, you're going to be able to do a lot more of the shorter distance things. And, you know, especially if you have something that has an ability to carry things like a touring bike, you're going to do a lot better whenever SH is the F, you know.
You just, you hit me there. Cause I still have a problem and I'll get to that, but I was talking on this other show last night, and they were talking about, you know, the electric, like California, they're outlawing, you know, everything has to be electric vehicles by 2030 or something, and they're outlawing buying gas powered generators, but we're also having problems with the grid, you know, so it doesn't make sense. But the whole thing with that I was saying about gas power or electric cars is, you know, when you buy your fuel, you're buying it not from a municipality, you're buying it from Chevron, you're buying it, and they may have, you know, some monopoly issues or government, whatever, but they are taxed and regulated, but they are not the ones controlling it, which you do have with your electricity and your grid. So shutting you down is going to be, you said it, it's going to be much easier because of control. Now, the problem I have is, my bikes are actually, they're not electric bikes, but the shifting is electric. So, yeah, I don't know if that's a new thing, but, it's been out there for like 10 years. So, the derailleurs, they have a little battery for the front and the back, and it's all wireless, and, I would still be screwed. I could, you know, if it goes out, I have one gear, that's about it.
You need to get yourself a beater bike, something.
Have one. I gave it to my son, so I might have to take it back.
Well, you were talking about doing some mountain bike trips and stuff like that. And I think mountain bikes are just a great thing for anybody to have. They're really entry level. They can hit a lot of different terrain. You're not going to be able to do every bit of terrain with, you know, a few $100 mountain bike, but you know, they're nice. I've got a, right now, one of my bikes is a Fat Tire Surly, the Pugsley. And I love that thing just because I see something and I'm like, oh, I'm going to drive over that because I can.
Exactly. You're making me, I mean, all my stuff, even, you know, if I were to, I don't have a mountain bike, but I've been looking at getting that, and that's electric. Everything's electric shifting now. It's just the way it is. So I can't be a proper prepper.
Yeah, I've never experienced electric shifting. It's interesting.
It's fantastic. Back in the 90s, Mavic, who is a component company, they started to develop one, but it was too bulky. They had the battery that was basically, I don't know if you had like lights, like Knight Rider, and that the battery, the water bottle is an actual battery pack. And that's kind of how it was. And it was too heavy. So it just didn't work, but they've reintroduced that. And I have one that's wired. So, you know, you have a little battery, you don't even see it. They put it in the seat post or somewhere. Then there's actually a wire. So your derailleur wire that comes up from the back is just a wire, like a electric wire. Well, in a race one time, someone hit me in the back and it broke that. So now I'm stuck in like my my 14 in the back. And I had one lap to go and it had a pretty solid climb in it. So I had the front derailleur still worked, but the back, I couldn't do it. And without going into too much heroic exploits, I got third that day. So it was pretty fantastic.
That's awesome. You just plowed through it?
Yeah, it was a steep climb. It was short. So I was able to get over that and then still be able to sprint. So,
with the cross chaining, right? That would have been the issue because 14 and one would be.
Yeah, so it was a 39:53 in the front. So 39:14 or whatever to get over this little steep climb. And then, you know, it was still fine. Actually, I was lucky because the sprint just had a slight drag uphill. So it was perfect gearing for that. So I felt good. Got to brag about that for a while.
Yeah. You should. You know, that's the other thing. And this is something for everybody as well. What you accomplish on the bike, it's yours. You know, you are only, you know, you're competing with other people, but when you're doing it by yourself, you're competing with yourself. And so, you know, the first time you get 100 miles in a day on a bike tour is just, an amazing feeling. It's a good reason to go to the bar and get a pitcher of beer. But you know, it is a great feeling to know that you did that yourself. It's great to get up to the top of the mountain and then earn the downhill. You know, you get up to the top and then you've got smooth sailing, downhill, all the other fun stuff. And we invited the haters because there's a bunch of people on the right, especially that hate bikes. And you know, I guess there are annoying cyclists out there. I try to not be annoying, but
same.
But you know, that there's annoying drivers out there. There's annoying everything out there.
first of all, you're the ultimate expert for bad drivers. You're a truck driver and you ride your bike. You see every bit of it from top to bottom, I imagine. I'm a man, so I see it as well, because women are on the road. So no, I'm just kidding.
Right.
But yeah. I a lot of those friends are my haters. And for the most part, you know, I just go back at them like, give me a break. You get winded typing on your keyboard, come out and handle some cycling with me. But yeah, I don't mind. People can hate. I get in trouble even on my cycling podcast because I've taken on some of the things, because a lot of my, you know, pure cycling friends, they're too cycling centric. And I'm like, a car is always going to win. You go up against a car, you're dead. And what did you prove? So, you know, 3-4-way stops, whatever it is, you know, the whole situation, just don't be that dick on the road. But it happens and you can't help it, but it's what it is.
I've been somewhat of a dick, and I've had, sure, you know, some extreme, you know, bike only opinions before. There was, yeah, a couple of years where I didn't even drive, that I can think of. You know, I didn't have a car. So, and I was riding for a living and commuting everywhere on bike. So, and I did hitchhike a few times that year, but, oh, wow, that's, you know, but yeah, I was a little bit of a righteous cyclist back then, but, and I think that puts people off. So, you know, if you want more people to ride bikes, try not to be that guy. And then, you know, there is nothing more fun than having some time off and just riding bikes with your friends from brewery to brewery and just enjoying an afternoon.
That is a lot of fun. Now you have to have friends that do that, which I do. So that's good times. But yeah, you can look, like I said, I don't mind. I'm biased. I've been doing this since I was 12 years old. I thoroughly love the bike. There's nothing. I can't tell you how many times I've been so lucky to go places and you're out in the middle of nowhere with your buddies. You're just climbing on your bike and, you know, you suffer to the top of the hill or you do whatever. And it's, you know, they used to have this race. Well, they still have it. It's in Colorado. It's up to 70. It's at Idaho Springs. And then it goes up to Mount Evans, the very top. It's the highest paved road in the U.S. It's like 14,000 something hundred feet. And it starts around 9,000. So it's 21 miles up to the top. And it's brutal. Okay. And first time I'm doing this, I'm like, I'm all the way up. I'm never doing this again. Da, da, da. And as soon as you finish, you know, I rode down and I'm like, okay, next year I'm going to do this different. And I'm going to do this different. And it's amazing how your body will automatically, you know, unless you're the kind of person that just hates it so much, they can never get over that, which I had a friend like that, but you know, you're able to accomplish those things. And then it's pretty amazing what you can do. And then to push yourself again the next year and whatnot. But it does help to have a bit of a positive mindset.
I never went up Mount Evans. I've heard about that ride. People have talked about it. I've gone through Idaho Springs before though. And on that trip I took US Highway 40. So I did Rabbit Ears on the bike.
Yeah.
And I did Berthoud on the bike.
Oh yeah.
Berthoud Pass, not Berthoud the city.
Yeah.
Because they're kind of far off from each other. Berthoud's by Loveland, but this is over by Idaho Springs.
Absolutely. I know all those things. Yes.
The hardest one that I ever did was in Utah. And I think it was Wolf Creek Pass in Utah, because there's Wolf Creek Pass in just about every state. That one was tough. And then there was a guy that was riding his road bike. He passes by me while I'm just, you know, dying on this hill, and I'm like, and he's like, oh, it's not too much further. And I'm like, yeah, easy for you to say.
Like, we had the Matt, so in cycling there's all kinds of categories. Okay. So there's pro, the 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever, down to 5. And it's kind of like your handicap in golf. So to move up, you've got to, you know, do good in races or experience or whatnot. And then there's also age divisions. So there's juniors for, you know, younger kids. And then there's masters. So once you become 35 and over, then they start dividing it into like 5-7 year periods. Anyway, so under USA Cycling, they have national championships. So I've gone out and I've done that several times. And I haven't done it for a few years, but we did one out in Ogden, Utah. And so in your area over there, and I'm trying to, you said Wolf Creek Pass, and I'm trying to remember where we did the final climb up to a ski hill that was brutal. But anyway, that's all I'm saying. I just, join it in with your,
I think it's along 40. It's over okay. by Unita. It's in the Unita, or what, however you pronounce it, because I've
Uintas.
Screwed that one up all. Uintas. There you go. Yeah. In those mountains, it's out there. I, you know, if I had a map, I'd just point at it right there. I was like, yeah, well, that's where I had a hard time.
Utah's great for bikes and stuff too.
It's great for driving. It's great for cycling. It is. I'm really privileged in my job that I end up in Utah a lot driving. It's one of the most beautiful states, if not the most beautiful state in the 48.
I think really beautiful states have extreme contrast like that one. I mean, I think California is beautiful too. You have, you know, your high deserts, your mountains, your beaches. Colorado, similar. I mean,
what
it's all
region of California are you in?
I'm Northern California. Oh, I don't care. I'm Northern California, just outside of Sacramento, up in the foothills. So.
Okay, you're in the good part.
Yeah. So cycling right here. I mean, you know, I'll go do intervals like today, and it's just I could barely leave my house, and I'm just steep climbs over and over and over. So I've got a. It's a luxury, yeah.
Yeah, I like that area. And yeah, Northern California is great. It's really where the most reasonable people in California are as well. You know, I mean, you got Sacramento is kind of a mess, but the rest of everything north of that is just, it's got a good attitude. Jefferson, you're in Jefferson.
I'm technically in Sacramento County, but Jefferson is right nearby. Although I want to get out of this state. I mean, you can only inoculate yourself so much, and at some point they overdo it. So who knows? Tennessee? I don't know where I'm going to go.
I highly recommend Texas, but okay. You know,
I'll see what the wife says.
It's hot. Just remember that. You know, everybody always says, "Oh, it's so hot." It's like, "Yes. Yes, it is."
Yeah. I think Texas has moved closer to the sun or something.
Yeah. I was the other day I was pulling a load out of border town. I was in Laredo, and it was 110 at night. It was 10 p.m. 110 degrees.
This is the crappy thing about where I live, which is the weather's great. You know, great climate. It's not humid. It gets hot, but then it's also nice. You know, we got the beach about an hour and a half. We got the skiing in, you know, an hour. It's crazy, but I mean, they're horrible here. And then, you know, if you go back east, you've got the humidity, you've got bugs. So this state, this is the reason why it's California. I mean, it's known for what it is, but man, they love to just kill you politics wise. So it's rough.
Yeah. They tax you for anything that you do. And then, you know, I was hearing this thing today where they were talking about Newsom, and Newsom's wife is the first partner now. She's calling herself the first partner. They have to do this thing where they murder the language and just, you know, and you can't be a first lady. That's just.
Yeah. Yeah. First partner. And that's what's funny is they live not like maybe 5 miles away from me here. And they send their kids to a private school. They're in the county. I'm 2 miles from the next county. And that county was one of the most open in the state. You know, so everything, he lived the life during all the crackdown stuff, just a little bit different than everybody else. Just a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. The French Laundry situation.
Yeah. That was another one. Right.
Yeah. They go, just in case people don't remember this, Newsom had a feast with a bunch of other rich people, and none of them were wearing masks. None of them had to show any sort of vaccine ID card or anything like that. And they all just have this massive feast while everybody else is locked out of everything.
Yeah.
And it was during the height of that.
Absolutely. And they tried to say, because it was indoors, but they tried to say, well, we had the side doors open. Once again, it's all this stupid science stuff that doesn't work. And it's in this small little town that's just, you know, rich as can be. It's a super expensive restaurant. And whatever. Somehow, I still have friends that were like, oh, yeah, he did a great job. So
I can't understand that. How does anyone think that he did great? And he's probably going to run for president at some point with that.
Yeah, probably. I think a lot of it is, you know, you come out of it and a lot of stuff that they believed was wrong. So instead of just going, you know what, I really screwed up, because even the screw up isn't so much like, oh, I did the wrong thing for myself. It's like, no, no, no. You harassed, wanted to jail all these other people for not doing what you thought was the right thing. Now it's wrong. So the only really mentally, maybe you just can, you have to go, okay, well, I'm just going to dig in and act like it never happened, or that our guy was, he did the right thing the whole time. So who knows? I don't know what the mentality of that is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he was being fed everything, you know, he's J. Paul Getty's like related to that family, and that it's,
yeah,
there are three families that run the entire state. It's a big corrupt circle.
Yep.
And yeah, get out while you still can.
Yeah. Without belaboring the Newsom thing, he did an interview 12, 13 years ago with Adam Carolla, and it's pretty famous. And last year, Brian McWilliams of Lions and Liberty, he came on, and we listened and watched this interview and then commented on it. And it's fascinating to see, you know, what you have now after the Corona stuff, after the homeless overrun right now, and his comments back then. I thought it was so you could check that out on my, if you want to see a royal takedown of Gavin Newsom, it's pretty good. Check that out.
That sounds awesome. Yeah. And then y'all also have the immigration issue too, especially in Southern California.
Yeah.
That's a big thing happening in Texas as well. You know, yeah. I end up on a lot of buses when I'm down at the border. And so I basically get to see a lot of the people as they're coming in. So far it is still mostly Latin Americans, but I have been seeing people from different parts of the world. I've been seeing, you know, some, you know, Western Africans and things like that. Mm. So,
yeah. Cause I'm sure it's the easier way to get in, right? They're not coming in through Canada.
And the United States is not stopping them. So,
yeah.
And apparently they're getting by the, you know, cause the bus stops at the checkpoint, and they're getting by with some kind of visa. They're allowed in for some reason. And I know that all you have to do is just say you're a refugee, and I don't think that they question things too much.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a ways from, my daughter lives in San Diego. So she's kind of somewhat impacted down there. But you know, you are obviously, and what you're doing with your job, you probably every once in a while have something close down to the border as well.
Oh yeah. I pull a lot of, freight either to or from the border. The border's a big deal in trucking, and you know, it's one of the reasons why I got property where I did, because I'm 100 miles from the border. I didn't want to be too close, but I also didn't want to be too far away, because it's business all year round, and 35 is one of the most busy interstates in the country, and because it's how things get from, you know, Canada to Mexico and back.
Do you only do U.S. or do you do into Canada or Mexico at all?
I haven't renewed my passport. It's been expired for a really long time. But I have been out of the country. It's just I'm not doing it with work. And, you know, Canada is a mess right now. There's checkpoints for all the papers, please. And, you know, and it's run by Justin Castro. And yeah, I have no interest in being in Canada while it's under this regime, and I doubt it's going to get any better.
Yeah.
And right. then Mexico around the border, you know, Mexico is great the further away from the border you are, but right around the border is where there's a lot of turf wars and situations that I don't want to deal with. So I just stick strictly to the United States.
Yeah. Probably a good idea. I mean, there's so much here. We just talked about the vastness 20. Of the U.S. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, that's the cool thing too, is that I have I've done 9 different bike tours in the United States. And so I've been through a lot of this terrain by bike, and then going through it in the truck is cool too, just because I know how it is out here and how different it is, you know? You know, I'm not on the interstate whenever I'm doing the bike thing, but I'm on a parallel highway that, you know, like there's places in Idaho where you go around and there's this cool dune park. You probably know about it at least, but you know, I'm cruising right through there and I'm like, oh yeah, that's where I went up that hill and all that other stuff, you know, just remembering things and remembering where cool campgrounds were, things like that.
What's I imagine with because I noticed this on a bike, if you do that on a bike and then you go on the car on the same road, you don't understand the gravity sometimes of the steepness of a hill or the terrain. But I'm sure a big load, you understand it much better, and with the bike as well. And sometimes you'd say, oh, you know, you could ride like 100 miles. That could be, you know, I've done racing out in Oklahoma. Okay, Oklahoma City, not Oklahoma City, Norman. They used to have a big race out there, and we would do. It was like 120. Well, so back up a bit. Once again, 96 Olympics were happening in the U.S. Everything with the racing that year. What, as you can tell, I raced in 96. I think I raced, it was in 1994 through 2000. So that's kind of my era as far as pro. But in 96, the Olympics were in Atlanta. So everything in the U.S. seemed like all these big races were always 135 miles because that was the Olympic distance. So we did this race out in Norman, Oklahoma, and the road race was 135 miles. And it's flat. I mean, there's not much terrain difference at all. So that's no big deal. And then you do another race, it's 130, like up in Colorado or somewhere else, and it, you know, 10,000 feet of climbing. It's a 6-7 hour day compared to a 4 hour day. It's a bit much.
Yeah, there's a huge difference with terrain. Terrain means everything. You know, there's days where, you know, on bike tour, you can end up doing only 50 miles. And then there's other days where you're 50 miles before noon. And
what was the longest day along. You did?
I think, let's see, like 115 or so, something in that range. I was like, I just wanted to get over 100, and the next good place to stop was another 15 miles. And, and so I went for it, and I was super happy about it, you know, went and got pizza and beer. But, you know, the 100-mile days are pretty standard, or, well, I wouldn't say standard, but that's about what you can do on a bike tour. You can go more. I've heard of people doing, you know, well up to like 140 and stuff like that. But I think you have to really bust ass to do that. And that's not the kind of cycling that I like to do.
Yeah. Just to honor, did you ever do like ride the Rockies? I think that was a big one out there.
I've never done any of the organized things. I know like Ragbri is a huge organized long bike trip, but I did this thing called Bikes Across Borders where we would build up a bike in Austin and then ride it to Mexico and donate it. So I've done that one a couple of times, and that's really fun because it's a big group cycling kind of thing. The days are short, you know, I think all those days, are no more than 50 miles just so everybody can do it. And yeah, it's really fun for the having people to talk to and all the other stuff. I've done trips by myself other than that. And I've done trips with one other person. I think that having one other person is really nice. It changes the whole dynamic.
Oh, yeah.
By yourself, it gets kind of weird, and sometimes you just want to get miles and you'll ride until it's dark, you know, and things like that. I'm sure that people have passed me at you know, riding my bike at 11 o'clock on the side of the highway or something, and they're like, what is this crazy guy doing? I'm sure that they're wondering what I'm up to.
That's such a different mentality from what I've done. I mean, like, I don't know. I think of what you're doing and I'm just like, that's crazy. And yet some of the things I've done are crazy too, but that really is. I mean, because that's some dedication. How'd you get into bike riding in the first place?
So I lived in New Zealand for a year and I came back and started hitchhiking in the United States. And I made a circle through the West, you know, from like Wyoming down into New Mexico and then back up to Colorado. And I ran into creeps. I did not run into that in New Zealand whenever I was hitchhiking. I never ran into a creep in New Zealand. Great, great people there. But in the United States, I ran into about 3 perverts that were making me offers and other things. And, you know, one guy, I thought I was going to have to stab a guy. I really did.
Yeah.
So I was up at a rest area in just north of Pueblo, and I met this guy in the rest area, and he was riding around the country to protest the war, and I thought that was really cool. He's an ex-Marine, and he thought that, you know, the Iraq war was BS, you know, and he was right. And so I started chatting with him, and I should do that. I should get a bike and go for it. And so by the next January, I was riding from Houston to Florida and back. And wow. That was the first trip I took, and I did it not really knowing how to bike tour at all. I didn't have panniers. I just had a regular rack, and I strapped my messenger bag onto it. I had a hammock tent, a jacket, and two changes of clothes. It was January, so I'm thinking, oh, I'm in the South, I'll be fine. I only need this jacket. There was a freeze that came through on that trip. That was kind of fun. The cops let me sleep in their lobby. That was pretty funny. But that's a dynamic of bike touring, is finding camping spaces. You know, like, some people can plan them all out and everything like that. And, you know, there's something we call a credit card tourist, who basically rides a bike like you ride and just uses the credit card every night, gets right. a hotel. And that's cool too. You know, I mean, you get to see the country that way. You're doing every single thing I am. It's just really expensive. You know, I was, in the first trip, I was just picking up cans of things at dollar stores. And, you know, my dinner would be like a can of beans, things like that. Eventually I got to cooking, you know, like I had a pannier that was completely dedicated to food, had all kinds of spices in it and dehydrated vegetables. And I was making gourmet stuff on the side of the road. That was an extra dynamic to bike touring, and made it a lot of fun. So it evolved along the way, you know, like the first tour I took, I didn't have a Brooks saddle for that. I had riser bars, and okay. the thing that hurt the most were my wrists. And one of my bikes is Butterfly bars. That's the one I've toured on the most. I really like Butterfly bars for touring. I'm not really into drop posture. It's just not, it doesn't suit me. I don't like being crouched
down.
Yeah,
that's a tough position to be in for hours and days on end. Yeah.
Yep. And I mean, I got riser bars on my mountain bike, but that's, you know, that's what they're for, you know?
Yeah. There's a legendary guy, a Canadian, name is Sven Tuft. And that's what he used to do. He would just tour around the U.S., Canada. He had a dog he pulled, and he did that for years. And then he was just such a monster that he started to do some bike racing. And next thing you know, he's like 7-time national champion. He won a stage in the Tour de France, and he had like a 10-year cycling career. But he was always a strange guy, because and I think when he retired, which was like 2-3 years ago, he went back to just bike packing, is what he calls it. And he just tours around, and that's just his life. And you know, for many people, that's a grand thing. And I understand for him, he's able to do that, and he's got a ton of money that he saved up from the years of being a top level professional. But nice thing if you can get it. Now, I don't know. I like to stay home more than that. But tell me this, where was the worst for being a cyclist as far as cars or people? Or is it just random? Everyone's bad.
Yeah, that's a hard one. You know, I grew up near Houston, and I always hate riding in Houston, and it's just not very well set up for it. There's certain places that are much better for that. You know, there's like, for instance, New Orleans, it's a really easy place to ride bikes, but there's so many things on the road that will chew up your bike. I can think of so many times being on the side of the road in New Orleans where I'm fixing a tire because I got a flat from some chunky road, or, you know, nails or whatever else that is a hazard out there. I don't know. Every place is different, and every place is there's a common thread everywhere in the United States. And then there's things that just really differentiate a place.
Yeah. And look, once again, some of my best friends on Twitter also always tag me when someone's getting hit by a car on a bike, and they think it's funny. Ha ha. Okay. Whatever. But I've had some haters out there as far as on the road too. I lived in Colorado like for a number of years, and it's country, but yet it's city. And so, people, old good old boys threw M80s at me before in the mountains. That was pretty, pretty good. It's also interesting because like where I grew up in the Northwest and then being out there, and where I like to ride, it's, you know, devoid of cars as much as possible. I love out in the mountains type of thing. And, it's crazy though, like, especially where those two places, there's a lot of farming, and you'll have a combine moving from one field to the next, taking up a whole lane. Cars will do, you know, 5 miles an hour for miles on end behind this combine. They're fine. But you're over the lane, bike lane, you know, a half an inch, and they're buzzing you. They're throwing shit at you. They're honking their horn. And I'm like, come on, I'm not the biggest problem here. You're okay with this combine and not me. So come on, people.
Right. Yeah. There's so many places too that, you know, I prefer to ride a place that has a shoulder, you know. I look at that too while I'm even now, you know, I'll be riding on some county road or something like that. I'll be driving the truck on a county road and I'll see the shoulder and think, oh yeah, that'd be a really great place to ride on a bike tour, because, you know, there's some places where the shoulder is either too rough or too yeah. narrow, things like that. Worst thing I ever had thrown at me was a lit cigar. Luckily I had, at that time I was wearing a hat that was pretty thick material, so it deflected it, and I was just like, yeah, that was pedicabbing. Whenever I've had the most stuff thrown at me and things yelled at me. And
that's just from the people you were pulling?
No, just random people, you know, like you basically get yourself stuck in traffic. You get yourself in the busiest part of town on purpose when you're doing it. It's an opposite kind of dynamic, because you got to be where the people are. Yeah. And it's funny because, you know, it's not just, there's negotiation, which is where you're probably going to run into the most amount of conflict with random people. Because drunk people don't seem to understand the value of services and things like that, or just understand that, you know, it's like, hey, I don't want to do that for less than $20. Sorry. And then they get all mad. You know, they feel insulted. It's like, no, I don't want to do it. You got to incentivize me to do it. And that's where you get.
Well, they probably think, it's not a car cab, it's a bike cab. Therefore, you know, you're just lesser, and I can just tell you what to do, and you'll be glad to do it. And you're like, no, I'm not. I'm still a human. And I'm still making money.
Yeah. And I loved stupid situations. I don't know why. I would do things where, you know, I could drop somebody off at the bottom of a hill. Their hotel is like a block up a hill or something like that, and just be like, all right, yeah, it's up there. But there are so many times where I would just see that hill and I'm taking this guy up this hill just because that's the thing. I want to, you know, struggle. And that's the thing about bikes too. That's something that, you know, and it's not just for the prepping aspect. This is something that everybody can pick up on, people that are bike haters or whatever, is that we don't struggle enough. We have very easy lives in air conditioning and, you know, and convenience everywhere. Struggling really will hone you down and make you humble, and you'll end up liking it. I know it's like sort of weird masochistic stuff. I think that's something that an undercurrent with every type of cyclist, right?
Yeah. You know, they talk about, oh yeah, the pain cave, and really, and I mean, there is something, it takes almost years to hone that, which is you come to a level of you know, you're racing or you're hanging on to a group or what have you, and you're there at your limit. And then you are able to continually hold that. And then you go through it and you come out the other side. And it's, once you first do that, the first time you do that, it's pretty enlightening. I remember that happened to me in high school, and I was like, it was crazy. And then, and it's just a different mindset and your body and what you can continue to do. This is why I joke about the haters, because, and I don't care, because cycling has done some wonderful things for me. It allowed me to visit all kinds of places. I shave my legs still. It's a wonderful thing. No, but visiting the fitness that I can still have, I love the competition. There's just so many good things. I learned how to take care of my own bike and just, you know, all the little things I've learned over the years. So you can hate on me all you want, but the reality is I'm going to still be around longer than the haters, I imagine, unless they run me off the road and then I'm trouble.
Right. That's the big hazard for sure. Yeah. I just love it. And I think everybody should go out and get a bike. That's what I'm saying here is if you want to survive what's coming up next, get a bicycle. Learn to love it.
Just like politics or whatever, the Mises Caucus took over the Libertarian Party. You don't like cyclists. They're all a bunch of weenies in tight shorts and shaved legs. Fine. Take over. Come join us. Come start riding with us and inoculate this culture with your whatever you've got. I'm fine with that.
I never did the spandex or the leg shaving thing. You don't have to. It's not required. It's not like the barrier for entry. You don't have to You don't have to do that. That's something that pros do in order to race, you know? But if you want to be a casual and have a good time, you know, the cool thing is like everybody that loves bikes is going to get along. That's you know, even if, you know, we could go talk to some lefty. Say like you and I rode our bikes to a brewery and ran into another cyclist and super crazy lefty, you know, took all the shots and did everything, you know, is super environmental, all the ridiculousness. We're going to get along based off of bikes.
I'm on a cycling team still, and there's 15 of us, and it runs the gamut from everybody. You know, you've got a guy still active military, you've got hardcore lefties, and we do group stuff all the time, and it's because we've got the cycling and or drinking beer in common or whatever it is. So yeah, you don't have to do it. And that's what, you know, the politics does come up, and we always have conversations, but we're good guys, we like each other, and because we have this common bond that is kind of enmeshed there. And I'll say this too, it was an important group like through COVID to be involved with, because it's like these guys that you for me, you know, when we race, you're in the trenches, you're doing, you know, and military commentary about that. But I mean, you're battling together, you're teammates, and you're helping each other, and you've been through all these things. So it was, you know, when shit hit the fan and there's some lefties or some righties, we all still kind of understood each other. And it was helpful for getting through that. I didn't lose any of those friends, which I did, just other people in general. So.
Did you find that there was quite a few people that also agreed with you that were just more on the side of the health side of things? Because there is that, the people that were anti-mandates and things like that, were there was a group of people that were, you know, primary reason is because of health.
I would like to say yes, but I'm in California. So cycling is inundated with a lot of lefties. And it kind of sucks for that. So you either, and so I want to say there are people just out there for health, but no, it was political. I mean, they stopped doing bike racing. You know, they had people that were putting on events. The big event coordinator that they do a bunch of bike races out here, they put on Facebook how it was your fault that we can't do this because you're not wearing a mask. I'm like, we're outside. It's just it's stupid people. So it's actually one of the reasons I kind of stopped doing my cycling podcast, because I'm like, it was pretty good. It was big production stuff. I mean, a lot of listeners and whatnot. And I was almost like, I don't want to entertain you guys anymore. I hate you, so many of you. I don't even want to entertain you anymore. And so I kind of backed off from that. But I'll still do it for the Tour de France.
Cool. Yeah. And I'm glad that we got to have a cool conversation about bikes, because, you know, there's few people in this community that are into it. And,
yeah,
you know, we just want to share our love with you and show you that, you know, it can be like a cool common denominator. Bikes are great.
And I just want to say real quick. So, I mean, we do completely different types, but I love the sport so much, and it's been such a good big part of my life that, you know, what you do is fascinating to me. I see, you know, guys like you out there riding, and I'm always just like, that's something I don't think I can do. And so I'm always impressed. And so, yeah, it's been fun to talk. Anytime you want to talk bikes, I'm here for you. So.
Heck yeah. Well, you know, that's funny, because I don't think I could do the racer thing. You know, it's just too too intense, too hammer sprint kind of situation. Whenever it's, you know, I'm leisurely. I like to look around, smell the flowers, things like that. I love, I like mountain biking, but I'm also a casual at that.
I'll just say real quick. So I told you when I was younger and I went all over the US, probably every state except for Alaska, at least racing. And then, you know, some foreign travel, don't ever have much recollection of enjoying the scenery, much of anything. You know, you're in, you're racing, you're hammered, you're tired, and then you're out. And so I'm like, I want to go back and visit these places just for enjoying. And for what I'd love to ride my bike through Italy or something and enjoy it. So kudos for you. You've got memories that are much different than mine, but I also have some pretty cool ones too.
Yeah. Do it though. I mean, that sounds awesome. Go to Italy and ride, because from what I understand about a European tour, that there's just really short distances between the cities.
Yeah.
So you're riding, you're in a city and it's small, but then there's countryside and then you're in another small city shortly after. I think that sounds really fun.
Yeah.
I'd want to go down canal system.
I'm sorry. Oh yeah. Yeah. That too. Yeah. I want to go out and hit like these, you know, some of these, go into the Alps, the Pyrenees, the Dolomites, these big mountains, and just do these amazing climbs. I need to get in a little better shape though for that. I've been lacking a bit. Do you still ride? Yeah. You still riding a bunch?
I hardly get to ride these days, you know, because trucking is just one of those lifestyles where, you know, whenever I get a chance, you know, the bike I was telling you that I bought in Utah, I went to a pawn shop and I couldn't believe how low they were selling this bike for. I ended up basically paying a brand new bike's cost to the repair shop though, because there was so many things that it needed. It was right. Basically, I just bought a frame.
Yeah.
I thought the wheels were going to be fine and everything like that, but they were, so it was a disc bike, but it didn't have disc rims on it. It was basically a Franken bike. And the only thing that's still the same about it is the frame. I didn't analyze it too much. I was just happy. I'm like, oh, that's a Jameis. Jameis makes good bikes.
Yeah.
You know? And, but now it's in great shape and it's really fun to ride. As soon as I grabbed that bike from the pawn shop and rode it without brakes, it was just the grin that I had, you know, and it was a beautiful day. It was just a perfect day to ride a bike and just, and that it was so much dopamine at once. It was great. It was a great moment.
Well, I don't know where you're up on it, but, when I was a kid, and I had a dirt bike, and you know, I can't help but every time I do something, I always think of competition, but it was a lot of freedom. I was able, you know, ride over to my friends, all the dopamine, what you're talking about, that's with a kid. It's such an enjoyment of doing that. And, you know, my kids, they're like, well, they're older now, but when they were younger, you know, they had bikes and they're just gone. And, it's a great way to learn your town, your city. I know my streets around here better than anybody else. I don't know the names of them, but I know how to get there because of the biking. And you're probably the same with the bike and car. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, from pedicabbing Austin so much, I know these shortcuts and ways around and just routes that you want to take where you're not going to get buzzed by a car, all these other fun things.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Tell everybody how to find you yet again.
So my name's on the screen there, Tyler Yonke, TYLERJANKE, that's my Twitter account. That's probably the best way to find me. And then all my podcasts, if you go to Rumble, just LPR, you'll see it on there, or YouTube Libertarian Podcast Review. Once again, if you caught your fancy for any of this cycling stuff and you want to, the biggest bike race in the world, it's and one of the biggest sporting events in the world, the Tour de France starts 1st of July. It's Between Two Wheels podcast. I'll be doing that at just like 30 minutes every day, kind of giving you a breakdown of the race and the preview for the next one. Gives you an understanding. It's pretty deep cycling. So if you're just the casual fan, it may be a little bit, but I think you'll maybe enjoy it. And there's some, at least six Americans in this race and they're fantastic. And there's a chance they're not going to win it overall, but they may have parts to play during it. So it'll be fun.
You know, that's funny. A lot of times while the Tour de France is going on, I've done bike tours this years ago, obviously, but I was doing it simultaneously as the event was going on, and I'd end up at a bar or something as I'm traveling and see the Tour de France on the TV, and it was just always awesome.
Or if you're doing that and then someone sees it, they're going to ask you a question because you're a cyclist,
yep.
right? So you're on a bike. What do you think? Could you do that? Have you done the tour? That's always the famous one.
Right. Right. People ask me that whenever I was doing the pedicab. It's like, oh, you probably do well since you carry people and things like that. I'm like, I don't know about that.
You never know.
Well, I also smoke, so, you know.
Well, shame on you.
I'm just one of those. One of those unhealthy cyclists.
It happens.
Anyway, and I'm going to say that if you want to put this on your feed, you're welcome to.
I'll be glad
and
to.
And if you're listening to me on Tyler's feed, it's, libertylinks.io/thedoomkitchen. My name is Ando. Thanks for tuning in, y'all. And by the way, thanks to Slam and Sam for the compliment before the show. I really appreciate that.